Here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next couple hours, we're going to be talking about cars and motorhomes and motorcycles and fuel injection and filters and maintenance and all that kind of stuff. Easiest way to get in is early. So if you have a car question, or if you and your husband or you and your wife have an ongoing dispute about what to do and when to do it or whatever, then just lay it out there for me, and I'll pick a side and tell you why I think we should do this. Our industry right now is in kind of disarray, the repair shop industry, both and we're talking about dealers, and we're talking about independent shops, we're talking about chain stores, we're talking about the quick lube facilities and the tire stores only. It's just kind of a lot in flux because there's so much going on behind the scenes. And the worst part for us is simple, the reduction in overall service, and that's, of course, good for you. But in the middle is a problem, and here's the deal. We used to be able to see you every 3,000 miles, or about 4 to 5 times a year you came into our shop. In those 4 or 5 times a year that you came into our shop, every other time, if we were playing by the rules, every other time we asked to rotate your tires. And when we rotated your tires, we checked your brakes, we checked your axles, your boots, we checked your power steering for leaking, we checked all your fluids in your oil change and made sure all the fluids were good color, none of them were burnt. We'd look for leaks, we looked for shock absorber problems, lower control arm problems, air conditioning problems. So we got to do that 3, 4, 5 times a year. Well, today your car has a once-a-year oil change, and many of you should take advantage of that because it's true. So in that particular thing, then all you really have to do is maybe stop by at this change between winter and summer and just have somebody check the air in your tires. That's about all. So, but that's created now, all of a sudden, this whole new marketing strategy where you bring your car in, and we give you a laundry list of things that need to be done. A big laundry list of things. And it's going to be around fluids and flushing, the two Fs. and those are high profit for us. And they take some time, but the risk is small, so you're not likely to make a mistake. But the idea is that we're not going to see you but once a year. So we got to, in the vernacular of some of the old guys that I grew up with, we got to clip your hair once a year instead of twice out of the 5 times you showed up before. So those are the kinds of things that go on behind the scenes. But the self-defense for car expense response is real simple. It's this. When you're faced with something like that, where someone is in front of you and saying you need the following stuff, then you just say to them, okay, let me get my owner's manual. And then we'll look at that, and you can show me in my owner's manual where it says that I need to change my transmission fluid every 30,000 miles. Then the response is going to be, well, okay, well, wait a minute. Your owner's manual is not written for the state of Arizona, and that's just flat bull. The owner's manual written for Arizona and every other state that that car lives in. And they're going to come up with all kinds of reasons because the owner's manuals, basically, in the last 5 years, owner's manuals are calling for 100,000-mile fluid changes. That's 100,000 miles of coolant, power steering, brake fluid, transmission oil, differential oil, all the fluids. Most all of them are going to be between 75 and 100,000 miles. So the old days of doing them every 30,000 miles, they're just gone. And so is a whole lot of income associated with that. So that's kind of what we're worried about. That's what you need to be worried about. And just if you're faced with you need all this stuff, it's okay to say, just a minute, I know you're busy, but let me go get the owner's manual, and I want to dog-ear the pages where you're talking about. Because my wife's going to ask about this, or my husband's going to ask about this, or whatever lie you want to tell them. It doesn't make any difference. I don't think God's going to get mad at you for throwing your wife under the bus or throwing your husband under the bus or using them as an excuse not to say yes to this $800 estimate. And that's really what it boils down to. Anyway, 602-508-0960 is the phone number if you have a car question or a car problem or a car comment. 602-508-0960. And this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair. Tom is up at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. He's a good guy. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians work for him, and that means that they're gray-haired, they've been around the block, and they've tested against the very best, and they won because now they're ASE Master Certified, and I am the same. So Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley, if you live in that area and you don't have a repair shop, you always start with an oil change or a tire rotation just to see how they feel about how they treat you, stuff like that. Last week, we got a caller. We'll do that first. Who's that?
Say hello to Rich.
Rich, how are you? Can I help you?
Good. How are you, Mark?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. Yes, sir.
Hey, just want to say I love you. You're awesome. I appreciate you.
Well, thank
you. I drive like 60 hours a week, and I can't wait till Saturday to hear you.
my wife says the other thing. I can't wait to get rid of you for 2 hours on Saturday. So I'll tell her Rich says disagrees with you.
There you go. No, I just want to give a shout-out to one of your preferred shops, if that was okay.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, Kurt's, they're awesome, man. I had a really bad power steering leak, and my AC was bad, and I had already gotten an estimate from another shop that I didn't trust, so I took it to them, and exactly what they said was wrong was exactly what fixed the car. I actually took, I'm kind of mechanically inclined myself, so I ended up doing the work, but their diag was just spot on and awesome.
We see that.
Made me a lot of money.
Thank you for that. We're seeing that a lot because when people seek a second opinion, folks, when you take your car into a shop for a second opinion, now keep in mind we got chain stores and quick lubes and we've got dealers and we've got independent shops and we've got all the different things, but when you bring it in for a second opinion, typically bringing it in for a tire rotation or bring it in to have them check your battery or something like that. And, oh, by the way, would you look it over for me? But they're probably going to look it over for you anyway. But, Rich, you're right. Right now it's kind of like the Wild West out there with respect to everybody has a different opinion on when you should do it. And it has everything to do with the fact that the fluids are much better and the distance between fluid changes has gone from 30,000 to 100,000 or somewhere in that vicinity. And, of course, we've lost all that income. So. But do-it-yourselfers
are awesome.
Good guys, and thank you for
that. I was going to say, Mark, I took my second car in this week to get a diag on, and I had a little issue with picking it up because my wife was gone. Unfortunately, she went to go run some errands and kind of forgot about me, and she had the car seats in her car.
Oh, boy.
So they actually drove my car to me at the end of the day and dropped it off to me. I mean, I paid cash, obviously, so I had cash to pay them for the diag, but they actually drove it to me. And dropped my car off, too. It was just incredible.
Well,
service. Jonathan and Ethan and Anna, they're all awesome over there.
Okay, well, thank you for that. Thank you very much. And
I wanted to thank you for recommending them, because like I said, I never would have tried them out, but I'm so blessed that I did. And thank you again for your service. I appreciate you.
Okay, Rich, thank you very much. This is what makes it worth my time, because there are some good shops out there, and I do think I have a good handle on the good shops. And my promise to you is this. If you go to one of my good shops, and these are friends of mine. That's all. They're friends of mine. I know them. I've known them for 20, 30, 40 years. And so they're all gray-haired guys, and they know right from wrong. But here's my promise. If you have a problem with one of the shops, and we're going to go into a dispute resolution process, usually at the Better Business Bureau. And at the end of the day, whatever the determination is, the shop promises to do whatever they're told. Now, if they refuse, and let's say, for instance, somebody in the dispute resolution arena says, Salem, you have to give her back $75. And Salem says, no, I'm not going to do that. Then I will step up and do it. I'll pay the $75 to the customer. So you're guaranteed to be treated fairly. Now, obviously, if a shop were to turn on me, they would be gone off my list. But that's kind of really how it works. It just works that simple. I'm promising you that you're going to get a fair treatment at my shops. And I'm promising you with my written word that if there's a problem, I'm going to be involved. I'm going to be involved until it's the resolution. And if the shop doesn't agree to the resolution, then I'll take care of it. We've had one shop that had a problem, and we got to the point where we said, we are going to write the refund of $850, and the shop said, no, I didn't realize it was this serious. And I believe that because it's partially my fault because I had never walked those shoes before. So anyway, the customer was taken care of, the shop is still on the list, and everything was fine. and I learned a lot. I should have been a little bit more upfront, but that's how it is. 602-508-0960. Let me ask you a question. Who makes parts for your cars? Last week we talked about I only want GM parts for my Escalade, and we hear China all the time. So I want to tell you a story, and this is a true story. And people go, they don't like the idea that China's getting all this money and that all of our money is going offshore, and it's really about money. And it's just this idea that China, bad. I don't know about China. I don't care about China. I know it's a communist country. I know that they have lots of manufacturing plants there. But I want to just give you an example. This is the example of the world. There's one engine upper mount on a 2004 Ultima. Now, it's made in China using our specifications, and we test the motor mounts before we accept them to make sure they were written and made to our specifications. We test the rubber, we test the metal, we make sure the holes are drilled in the right place. All that stuff is done. You with me? Okay. Now, it costs the guy in China $8.25. to make the motor mount, and he sells it to a representative of the United States from one of the parts places for $8.50. So right off the bat, you're worried about all the money goes to China. We got 25 cents of every mount goes to China. 25 cents. Now, at the end of the day, that part is shipped to the United States. It goes to a warehouse. The warehouse supplies the jobber, and the jobber supplies the installer, me, and the installer puts it on your car, yours. Okay? You with me? We got all these people are in the step here. So when it has transportation costs to go on a boat between China and the west coast of the United States, and then from there it's trucked to all the different warehouses, hundreds, thousands of motor mounts. And then from there they go to my jobber. And the jobber is the guy that sells to me. It's like AutoZone, O'Reilly's, Factory Motor Parts, Parts Authority. Those auto parts places, those are called jobbers. Now, I look at the computer and I order the mount. They throw it on one of their shuttles and bring it to my shop. I sell it to you. I'm going to sell it to you for $73. You remember that $8.50 mount out of China? Okay, let's look. How much of the money stayed in the United States? Well, only $8.50 of that mount stayed in China. The rest of it was on the boat to get here, on the truck to get here. But the guy that made the most money on it is the installer, the guy that installed it in your car. I'll give you an example. That same motor, that $73 motor mount, cost me between $45 and $50. So if let's say it's $50, I make $23 on it. I make more than all the other guys in front of me. and so I'm going to sell it to you for $73 because I paid $50 for it. See the difference? This whole idea that all this money's going to China is not true. It's never been true. The guys that I worked on this research with buy parts by millions of dollars all over the world. Africa, Europe, China, Taiwan, Canada, Mexico, South America, on and on and on. And when you talk about all of this, these guys are buying and they're bringing it here. But the most important part is such a minute amount of money stays in China with this motor mount example I gave you. That's it. Just 25 cents. That's it. Now, obviously 25 cents times 100,000, okay, that's fine. But when it comes to that part, the overwhelming majority of money that's spent on that part as it's sold and resold and resold and resold stays in the United States. It just does. So at the end of the day, that $73 mount was really $8.50 in China. And everybody else makes money, but Mark Salem, or the installer, I should say, makes the most amount of money, but we have to warranty it too. So we have to install it and we have to warranty it. And so if it goes bad, we're going to be on the hook. So that's how it works. 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. We're here for 2 hours till 12 o'clock, and you're welcome to join us. It's a live car show, and you call 602-508-0960. They're going to answer the phone. They're going to ask you your name. You want to talk to Mark? The answer is yes. And then they whisper in my ear that Bob's your next caller, and he is my next caller. And then I take your call. So it's that easy. when it comes to car repair, there's guys out there that are really the gurus of something. And Phil, with Transmissions from Automatic Transmission Exchange, is that guy. Phil's been around since Fred Flintstone cars when you pedaled with your feet. He knows automatic transmissions, and the fundamentals haven't changed. It's changed how we make them work, because now we use electronics, and we use solenoids, and we use sensors, where before we used throttle pressure, we used speed, we used engine vacuum. So it's different. But if you want a transmission shop that's the best one, as far as I'm concerned, they've been around since 1968, then Automatic Transmission Exchange is at 40th Street in Washington. And Phil will drive your car if you'll call and just let him know you'd like to stop by on this date at this time and have somebody take a ride with you. And you should insist to tell them that you can duplicate the problem. But you're not going to take his driver for a two-hour road drive until you can make it happen. That's not fair. You know that, I know that, he knows that. But he's really good at what he does, Phil, at Automatic Transmission Exchange. Bob, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark. So, Mark, I've got a 1995 Chevy G20 work truck. It's served me well over the years. I got about $130,000 on it. But probably for the last 8 years or so, I couldn't keep an air conditioning compressor in it. Every time they put a new one in, a few months later, either the clutch would go out or the compressor would stop pumping hot. And I'd bring it into them. They'd have it for a few days, and they'd wind up just changing the compressor again. So after the fourth one, they told me, don't bring it here anymore. We're done warrantying it, whatever. And I can't seem to get to the bottom of it.
Well, I can. I can tell you what they did. They never flushed it good. They never flushed it right. So when the first one grenaded, it sent metal throughout the whole system. And they just kept taking it in the compressor, but they didn't flush the metal out of the lines and replace the accumulator and replace the orifice tube and to flush the condenser and can flush the evaporator. So what they did is every time they put a new compressor in, it became the filter, and then it failed after it sucked a bunch of metal, and it sucked a bunch of metal in, but then it left a bunch of metal too. So your system is completely contaminated. It's probably got metal throughout. And if you want it done right, it's going to be a $1,000 bill.
Well, I'll tell you, they had changed the accumulator probably with one or two of those change-outs. And I remember they changed almost all the parts they could, except they said, we're not doing the condenser because it's a major, you know, you got to take the front end off and this and that. So I was fixing to change the condenser out myself. But now that you tell me it's probably blown shrapnel through the whole system, maybe I got to change everything out then.
Well, you know, first of all, when you walk in with this story, I don't want nothing to do with it. When you walk in and I hear this front counter conversation, my ears go up. I'm looking at my stack. They're looking at me. They know what I'm thinking. This better be a big estimate because I don't want it. Because somebody's going to have to go in there and do a whole lot of work.
I understand.
So, you know, we have chemicals to flush the evaporator, flush the condenser, flush the lines. We have all of that. And a lot of other shops do, too. But the problem is it's such a mess that someone has to live with it.
Yeah.
That guy got the money on the front side, but I'm going to have to live with it. I'm going to have to give you a warranty, and you're going to hold me to a really high standard because you're still mad at the first guy. So that's the problem, you know? And then if you get involved, how much oil did they drain out, and how much oil did they put in? And you don't know how to do that. So if you start messing with it and you start cleaning out the condenser and then you read on YouTube that you're supposed to add 5 ounces of oil to the condenser, you just screwed it up more because you don't put 5 ounces, but the guy at YouTube told you you did. And so you have all these dynamics that go on. So really,
that's where I was heading. That's exactly where I was heading. I was getting ready to do it myself, put the oil in, but there was a lot of questions I couldn't get answered.
Well, you can buy the solvent, and if you have an air compressor and an air hose, you can buy the solvent. Yeah. You can rent a flush machine, a flush device is what I say. It's not a machine. And so you're going to blow out. You're going to use compressed air and solvent, and you're going to have a rag over the other end of the pipe, and you're going to just blow until the rag's clean. and you're going to do that to the evaporator and the condenser. Then you're going to do all the lines. Then you're going to have to hang the compressor on there. Now you've just wiped out all the oil in the compressor and the generator, or in the alternator. Oh, what am I saying? You cleaned out all the oil in the accumulator and the condenser. So now you're going to have to figure out and go to the manufacturer's websites, and I'm guessing here. Don't hold me to this. The manufacturer says if you're going to replace our condenser, then add 2 ounces of, you know, R12 oil. Some of them may say 1 ounce, some of them may say 2 ounces, some of them may say don't add any. But then you have to fill the compressor up too. And sometimes it comes full already, and sometimes it doesn't. Uh-huh. And so then you got the accumulator, and so you're probably going to add a little bit of oil to the accumulator, the condenser, and the evaporator. This is a big deal. And aren't you madder than hell that this guy led you down this path and then divorced you?
Yes, sir. Yeah. You don't have a guru for me, Mark?
I'm gonna tell you what to say, okay? you're gonna say, I've made this mistake myself, and I tried to fix this, and I obviously made a big mess of it, but I think you're gonna need to start from scratch with respect to just, you know, cleaning up all the stuff, places that I probably have too much oil in and stuff like that. And so you're probably gonna have to hang a compressor and an orifice tube on it. They're probably going to want to put an accumulator on it. So you're probably going to have to do all of that. You're going to have your hat in your hand, and you're going to have to say, try to get somebody to help you with this. But forget about the long story that goes behind it. It's easier, and it's softer from my heart to accept you when you're standing in front of me and telling me that you screwed up everything than falling on the sword. You're exactly right. What part of town do you live in?
I'm up in North Scottsdale.
Oh, I'd call Blackwell and talk to him, and he's at 40th Street and Greenway, and he's capable of doing that. And but I think across the board you're going to have between 25% and 33% more than normal. And as long as he knows up front that this has been a calamity since day one, that shouldn't be a problem. But then if you wave the red flag in front of him, everybody tells me that after I messed it all up, that nobody will touch it. And then I heard your name, and I heard that Blackwell's really a good guy, and Blackwell believes in God, and Blackwell will rescue us from our own problems. And so I'm asking you, would you take this and call me with an estimate? And then if he says no,
he's not listening.
And then if he says no, tell him Mark Salem has pictures of you with different animals. He said he'd lend me those pictures if you won't say yes. And then we'll go from there, okay?
Okay.
Okay, good luck.
I'm going to call Blackwell. Thanks a lot, Mark. Okay. Bye.
All righty, bye-bye. Oh, he's going to kill me. He'll call me immediately. That's why I have to mute my phone when I'm on the air, because I've talked about Kurtz and now I've talked about Blackwell. They all have my cell phone and they're all going to call me, and I don't answer during the show because I don't have time to argue. And besides that, what am I doing? I'm just having a little fun at their expense. Blackwell's go, what did I do to have you send me this job? And I said, well, he was in your geographical area. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And this phone number, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, you're welcome to call us. And we
Hello,
take,
Mark.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Gil. In your last segment, I just want a clarification. When you're talking about pictures with animals, are you talking about stuffed animals?
Gil is the guy that runs the show, and he's having a question. Gil, I'm talking about bovines and swine.
Just a point of clarification.
And they could be live, they could be dead, they could be stuffed. If I have a picture of Blackwell with what could be considered swine or or bovine.
Oh, gotcha.
And it's just, it's a joke between us, but thank you for calling me out on that. I'll make sure that I do the same thing. If your wife will call me and tell me some of your weaknesses, I will discuss those on the radio too.
Let's go on to the next call.
Okay. All right. Before we do go to the next call, let me talk about Auto Dynamics in Sun City. Family owned and operated since 1982. I've known Chuck since 1968. He knows he's a man of pride. He knows cars and trucks. He's not going to let his technicians or his staff cock him into something he knows isn't true. They've been around a very long time, and it's the only place in Sun City that I can agree to recommend. I've known Chuck, like I said, for a long time. So he's on the north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. It's called Automotive Dynamics. Jim, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, I have a 08 Civic with a lot of miles on it. I've been told all the motor mounts need to be replaced. And I've been told by several people, several independent shops, that unless I use the genuine Honda parts, it's likely to still vibrate. And I have another question sort of pertaining the automatic transmission fluid. I've heard dire warnings about using anything but Honda fluid. What do you think about those things? Because in the case of the motor mount, the hydraulic mount is double the price of the aftermarket mount.
Okay. I get the gist, and I disagree with everything you said. And frankly, if I heard this conversation going at the front counter, I would give them the sign just to wave them goodbye. It's a bunch of crap. It's just a bunch of crap. There's no place that makes Honda motor mounts for Honda. Honda buys them on the open market. They put them in a Honda box. So you can buy, you know, if you want, just go down to the auto parts store and have them pull a mount for you and then take a picture of it and then go to Honda and have them take a picture of it and then let me mix the pictures up and I'll bet you dollars to donut you can't pick the Honda mount out of five mounts. You can't pick it, neither can I. As far as fluids are concerned, this is a crazy conversation. You can tell that it just wads up my underwear something fierce, and I'm not mad at you. Thank you for bringing it up. But this just wads up my underwear. Let me just give you a couple of things, okay? There's only one company in the world that makes thermostats. One oil filter maker that serves the United States makes 50% of all the automotive filters made. 50%. So tell all those guys out there in YouTube land, just walk into any auto parts store and pull every oil filter for a Honda that's on the ground, and I can tell you right now that 9 out of 10 of them are going to be from this company right here, and they're going to be put in a different box. 5 China companies make all the front-wheel drive axles. 8 Chinese companies make 75% of all the mounts. 8 Chinese companies make them to specifications provided by buyers in the United States.
2 minutes.
And they come in anywhere from 45 to 50 boxes. So on and on and on and on. Let me ask you a couple of questions. Why do you need motor mounts? What's the symptoms? Other than somebody told you you did. What symptoms are they going to fix?
Oh, I've gone through this before. It's
no, I'm just answering my question. Just answer my question for me. What symptoms are they going to fix? What do you have now that they're going to get rid of?
Hopefully the vibration.
Okay, is the vibration in park? It's yes or no?
Whenever the engine is, yeah, it's there all the time.
Okay, well, see, that flies in the face of what I know because, you see, when you put it in park, there is no load on the motor and there should be no vibration. Then when you put it in reverse, if the reverse mount is bad, you put it in reverse, then the engine vibration is transferred to the frame of the car. But then if you put it into drive and the drive mount or the load mount is bad, then the vibration is transferred. So the vibration should change depending on park, reverse, neutral, drive. That's the most important part you're missing. The idea that someone's going to just say, you need all your mounts, rarely does that happen. Usually it's you just need one mount. And then, of course, they're going to say, well, you wouldn't buy just one shoe. You'd buy two shoes. That's why we want to do all the mounts for $1,150. Well, there's a lot of us that'll do one mount. There's a lot of us that'll do one mount. So, and then as far as your transmission fluid is concerned... And let me look and see what I can find on that kind of stuff. Fluids. Oh, there's only four companies that make oil. And these are the guys, Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron pull it out of the ground, and they make everybody else's oil. So there's a good chance, there's a 99% chance that whatever oil you put in your Honda from, in a Honda can came from one of those four makers. And they're the ones that pull the oil out of the ground and make the oil. So, I don't know how I can help you. I can tell you that I think you're foolish to try to find everything in Honda. I think you should go with name brands. I think you should something that you recognize the name. And I think you should find a shop that's going to stand behind the parts they install. And that's the answer. I got to run. Good luck. It's 40 minutes after the hour, and we'll be back in just a minute. Forty-four minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, 602-508-0960. If you want to chew on my ear, you certainly can. 602-508-0960. We'll be here for another hour after the top, so we're here from 10 till 12. So we get as many calls in as we can. Let me talk real quick about Larry Harker's Auto. Been around since 1967, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob and Ellen run it. Ellen runs the front counter. Bob runs the shop. Their nephew works there, and this kid, I wish someday someone would say, you're as good as he is, because he's that good. Really, really good. So if you're on the west side, or if you have a car that needs to be diagnosed, then they would be a good place to go, because they're very good at diagnosing problems and bidding them appropriately. That's Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Let's go to the phones real quick, and we'll talk to Mark. Mark, how are you?
Hey, Mark. Thank you for taking the call.
You bet.
Happy Easter.
Thank you.
I got a Ford F-150 2014, just 44,000 miles on it, and I noticed that that the blower for the heater and the air conditioner kind of gradually just wants to intermittently work.
Okay.
Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. I've done some internet sleuthing, and it appears that they're pretty standard. One of the possibilities is at least a connector harness that they've had some issues with over the years, that it's not keeping the total connection, you know,
Okay. Behind
the glove box, I guess. But I was looking for a recommendation.
Okay.
In Scottsdale, but I could travel. I'm retired, but looking for somebody that could diagnose it and maybe solve the issue.
Okay, let me explain real quick. You have four speeds in your fan. You have 1, 2, 3,
yep.
And 4 is wide open throttle. When we go to 4,
yes,
we take battery and we go straight to the blower motor, and we don't go through any resistors or diodes, okay? So,
okay.
Because when we go to low gear or first blower, then we're going to go through a resistor to slow the motor down, and then the next speed speeds it up a little bit, and then another one speeds it up a little bit more, and then on number 4, boom, we're going straight to the battery, okay?
Gotcha.
Now, what needs to happen is you need to figure out if this problem's on 1, 2, and 3 or 4. You have to figure that out. So you need to go through that way, and you can put your blower motor, but what we're really interested in is the speeds. If it happens in 1, 2, and 3, then it's probably going to be a resistor, it's probably going to be a blower motor resistor, and it's probably going to be the switch. But I wouldn't plan on fixing it based on the guys on the internet, because most of them won't agree that they fixed the car by putting a Scookulator valve on it, but it only lasted a week, and they didn't tell anybody that they really didn't fix it, but they did tell everybody that they fixed it. They didn't.
Gotcha.
And so this is really simple. On a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 5. This is no big deal. Get in there with your digital volt ohmmeter. Let's go to the blower motor. Now, something else. Do you know where the blower motor's at?
I don't. You know, I'm real technologically inclined, but I'm understanding what you're saying. I think.
Okay. Well, let me ask you why I asked
right
that.
Here.
Okay. If the blower motor's underneath the hood, the real question is the blower motor got bad brushes? And if it doesn't work, I would love, if no matter if it's underneath the passenger's feet or if it's outside the car on the firewall, I would love for you to take the wooden handle of a hammer. The key's on. The car's running. You've asked for a blower, and it's not working. If you tapped on the blower.
Give it a tap.
And if it came alive, then put a new blower motor on.
Gotcha. That's another possibility then, too.
Absolutely. Right? And the brushes.
But as far as going through this testing with the cycling, you're right. It's got basically four clicks on that fan. It's a simple, just Ford F-150, 4x4. What I want to do is to, with the car on, just try to do it at one, see if anything happens. Try to do it at two.
That's it.
See if anything happens. Try to do it at three, see if anything happens. And then four full.
Where's the problem?
If I get nothing on all those, if I don't get any blowing, then what's the next
thing? I want you to
go
to SPAD number three, go to speed three, and hit the blower motor with a hammer handle or something.
Yeah.
I don't want to damage it. I just want to jar it. That's
all. Right. I'm
and then last on a Ford, that with that same hammer, that's a very important tool for Fords, okay? On the same hammer, you use your right hand without the hammer, and right above the switch, you got it on speed three, and there's nothing coming out, and I want you to go with your fist on the dash. Don't break the dash. But let's just hit the dash, and if it starts blowing, then the gurus, there's a plug at the back of the blower switch that usually overheats because the blower motor is drawing too much amp, so it burns a couple of the terminals. So you have to go in there, cut that out, put a new one in, and replace the blower motor at the same time.
Gotcha. Well, if I don't want to do any of that, can you get me to a diagnosis? Because frankly, I'm not real great at this stuff.
Okay. Where do you live?
And I could travel. I know that I listen to you a lot, and I know that you have a kind of a dearth of places in the North Scottsdale Cave Creek area. But I would really like to go to somebody that's really good with, basically this type of deal.
I'm going to send you to, there's a shop. You know how sometimes your head just goes crazy? Bell Automotive, McDowell, and the freeway on the Pima Road freeway. What is that? The 101? Yeah, that's the 101. He's on the north side of the road. Bell Automotive. Craig is an old time guy. This on a 1 to 10 scale will be a 2 to him. His wife Vicky's at the front counter, and don't make her mad because she's meaner than a junkyard dog. She's the nicest person in the world, but she just runs that place with an iron fist. And I love her. I love strong women like that. But Craig is no problem. You can come on down from North Scottsdale, go to McDowell and Pima, talk to Bell, and call and make an appointment. And this is, like I said, on a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 2 for him.
Be just on the west side of that intersection, when you get off the 101 at McDowell?
Yes, and he's on the north side of the road.
North. Okay, good. And the last thing are they a family run out? Has he been there a while?
Craig and Vicky took it over from Craig's dad and mother. So Carol Bell is his dad, and Elaine was his mother.
Yep.
And then they took it over. So they're actually, I think, second or third generations at that place. They've been around a long time. He knows what he's doing. Like I said, this is a piece of cake. Okay?
Yeah. I'll give him a shout and let him know that you try to get something next weekend. I know everybody's been really busy, but try to get in next week, and I'll let them know that you sent me, okay?
Yeah, no, that's fine. And just say I intend to tell you that Mark Salem sent me, and he said to make sure that his check had at least 3 or 4 numbers to the left of the decimal point. And he'll laugh just like you did. He knows better than that.
Yeah.
All right, I got to go. Thank you. Donald, you're up next. How can I help you?
Mark, Donald dropped, so the phone lines are open.
Oh, phone lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, you can. The lines are wide open, and like Gil says, we're going to be here for another hour, and so we can talk about your car. There's just a lot of... I want to warn you about going on the internet and having people fix your car. Listen to the radio show. I get to ask you questions. How about, does it happen on 1, 2, or 3 of the speeds, or is it always the high speed? I get to ask you those questions. They don't get to ask you those questions because they don't know what they're doing. And then they don't know what the difference between the resistor and then just a 12-volt lead to the blower motor. That's high speed. And the rest of them, we trim the electricity down so that you get low, it's just whispering, and then medium, and then high, and then, you know, bonsai blowing at the top. Just be cautious about that. It's really important to know that if this person was as crossed If he was cross-trained across all kinds of cars, he would be working for guys like me for $100,000 a year. And the last thing he'd want to do on weekends and on nights is be on YouTube telling people how to fix their cars. And you'll notice that when I'm talking to people, I'm asking lots of questions. And if he's not asking you questions, then he doesn't know how to kind of get in the zip code of the problem. So that give and take has to happen. The serious issue on our industry is you go in and talk to somebody at the front counter. Could be a service writer. That's usually what they're called. And they don't really have a technical background as well. If they do, then they do ask a lot of the questions. But you say, my blower intermittently doesn't work. Okay, well, thank you. Blower motor intermittently doesn't work. That's not what I want my service writers to do. I want them to say, can you tell if it's speed 1, 2, and 3? We're going to bracket this. 1, 2, and 3 are one area of wiring, and then number 4 is another area of wiring. And what I'm trying to find out is, oh, well, when it quits working, it's on both of them. That tells us it's almost assuredly the blower motor. It's almost assuredly the blower motor. The blower motor's back. How many miles have you got on this? 146,000. On a Ford? I know you're fibbing me. Come on, tell me the truth. And, of course, I'm teasing you. So and then you have that conversation. A lot of this stuff, if you can talk to somebody who's been around, a little gray-haired guy, then a lot of times that's going to save you money in the shop because the service writer got so much information. And that's kind of what it's all about. I've been doing car radio since 1988 in the Valley. I've done it in St. Louis. I've worked for NASCAR and done radio for them as well. But my real love is doing what I do every Saturday right here. And I've been in Phoenix since 1988. And I own a shop here, but this isn't about my shop. I object to the fact that somebody would get a radio show and then spend an hour or two thumping their chest and telling everybody how good they are. I hate that. I don't want to do that. And you'll never hear me say the name of my shop because it's not important. What's important is to kind of bring our industry in front of you, and I'll be their representative. And it's important for us to have a conversation, and it's important. It's not good to start the conversation off with challenging the expert in front of you by telling him what the guys on YouTube said. Because that just doesn't work out. And then I'm thinking, well, I bet they didn't ask you which blower speed it was. I bet they didn't ask you if it was recirculation or outside air, which is two different ways we put air on the blower. I bet he didn't ask you if you thump on the dash, if it makes it come back after it goes away. And when it comes back, does it come back on the same speed it was at, or does it come back on high? Because that would mean the high blower relay stuck. You see what I'm saying? So the more we can talk, the cheaper your bill is because the diagnostic is handled at the front counter. And if you don't feel like you're getting a good shake from your shop, then do this. Write it down. Just write a letter to the technician. Tell him what you did. Tell him what you think. And describe the problem. And then just put it with a piece of tape on the rearview mirror. And then give him your cell phone number. When technicians get that kind of involvement from women or men, they love that. They love having that personal contact with the owner of the vehicle. And you know what they love the most? They love calling you and saying, I got it. I got it. You know that you okayed the estimate, and I have fixed it, and I know I have fixed it, and I've put the old parts in the car, and in one of the parts that's in a box, I took the cover off of it, and look at the points inside that relay. You'll see that they're burnt to a crisp, and it was the high blower points that were burnt to a crisp, and that's why I wanted to put a relay and a blower motor in it, because the blower motor wiped the relay out. So it doesn't do any good to just put a new blower motor in it, because the relay still took a beating because of all the electrical consumption by the blower motor that was shorted. That's kind of how it works. So I give you suggestions. You're welcome to take them or not take them, and it's okay with me if you decide not to or if you decide to. But if you have a question, now's the time, because we're going to go for another hour. Here's the phone number, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and Gil's going to answer the phone. Just be nice to him. He just got out of prison, and we're trying to rehabilitate him and bring him back to just being nice to people and not using bad words. He's going to kill me for saying that. 602-508-0960. And if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960-9696. Toll free outside Phoenix, 888-960-9696. Every Saturday, I'm here talking about cars. And my email address is mark@marksalem.com. So if you have a question and you want to email me that, you're going to get an answer. But please give me a phone number, because sometimes I like to call and I'd rather talk to you than type for the rest of my life. And so I'm going to have questions like I do on the radio. So again, my email is mark@marksalem.com. And you're welcome to send me an email when you get there. And again, the phone number and the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. And Mark and Gil will be back right after this.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and the lines are wide open. If you'd like to join us, now's the time. You can get in pretty quick, 602-508-0960,
602-508-0960. And that's good no matter where you're at. If you want to use the toll-free number, you can. It's 888-960-9696. A whole lot of 96s in there. But you're welcome to call. And basically, year, make, and model of the car, and let's talk about the symptoms. That's all. Just year, make, and model of the car, how many miles. I'm typically not going to ask you what color it is, because you know and I know it doesn't make any difference, but it's just kind of the symptoms. Vibrations, it doesn't start. Well, when you say it doesn't start, does that mean it doesn't crank over or it doesn't catch? And that's the important part, is cranking over and catching. Let me tell you about Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. When it comes to diesels, Nate is like the king of diesels. He is really, really good at what he does. He's up on the I-17 in Pinnacle Peak. And when it comes to selling parts, you can go on his website, and he's got just about every diesel part that him and I both agree. I mean, I agree with him. Let me say that. It's his website. That the parts he sells are really the best parts. And there's some performance stuff in there, and there's some stuff that makes them go a little faster, a little quicker. And those are the kinds of things that he sells. But if you've got a diesel, you got a Ford, Chevy, or Dodge, and it doesn't start, or it's got a check engine light, then Nate's a good guy. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. And we have someone on the line. Who might that be, Gil?
Say hello to Stefan.
Stefan, how are you?
I'm okay.
How can I help you?
Got a car. What would I'm trying to find out what would make a 2005 Hyundai Tiburon GT with 105,000 miles, and that's blue, and put up misfire codes, cylinder misfire codes on all cylinders 1 through 6, and either all or nothing on the codes.
Okay. Well, the computer knows that the car's misfiring because it's watching the crankshaft sensor. And it knows that there's not a rush of power when it does that. When you have them across the board, a lot of times, and I'm not going to tell you how to fix your car, okay? I mean, there's just so much more to it. But let me ask you a couple questions. Will it do 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 miles an hour?
Hasn't been taken that far.
Okay. The reason I ask you that is because a misfire on a fuel starvation problem will oftentimes be codes on all the cylinders. So I'm missing fuel. I'm missing the supply, the filter's plugged, the pump is weak, whatever. So as I get up into the higher RPMs, then I run into codes, and it's because the computer's going, hey, I've just lost a lot of power. It doesn't understand that there's no fuel flowing through the injectors because your fuel filter's plugged solid. That's just an example. It could easily be something that the front crankshaft pulley is leaking oil and it's contaminated the front crankshaft sensor. There's so many different things. But to be real honest with you, this isn't a big deal. I mean, I don't know what the repair is going to be, but to go in there, and a lot of times what we'll do is we'll clear the codes, clear the memory, and we'll go out and drive it, and maybe we'll leave one spark plug wire off, and we'll see if the computer can pick up that number 4 has been removed. And that will help us understand what the computer's seeing. But it is unusual that you've got misfires on all the cylinders, and that's why I'm looking at something that's broad. Maybe a big air leak maybe a big vacuum leak. Maybe this is a situation where the EGR valve is stuck open. Maybe this has got a, you've got a bad brake booster. These are things that would cause a big vacuum leak and cause a misfire across the board.
All cylinders, so air leak, anything that leans it down, or starvation of fuel.
That's it.
That could do all or nothing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, think about it. Otherwise, it would be cylinder specific. So if it had a bad plug, a bad coil, a bad wire, or if the EGR valve was sitting on top of cylinder 3 on the intake manifold and the EGR valve was stuck open, it would just really only affect 3. So those are the kinds of thoughts that we think of. What part of town do you live in?
Cars in Glendale.
Okay.
Southeast Glendale, 40 off of Bethany Home Road.
Okay.
Yeah, basically I-17 at Bethany.
Okay. Well, you got Kurtz at Bell Road that could fix your problem. You got Action Auto at Bell and I-17. Kurtz is at Bell and I-17. Then what mile north of him is Tom at Action Auto. He's at Northern. Hang on a minute, and I'm going to look at my sheet because I just talked about Deer Valley. He's at Deer Valley. And then you got Harker's over at 38th Avenue and Indian School. I am quite sure all three of those guys. And it's important to know there's three parts of your bill. There's the diagnostic process. And the best you could hope for was they fix it after they found it for a minute or two. They plug something in. They fix something. And it does happen where we fix it 3 minutes after we find it. And so there's a diagnostic process, and then there's a fix. Sometimes we roll them together, sometimes they're separate. It depends on who's the king of the shop. In my place, we do it twice. We show the diagnostic and the fix. So there's a lot of shops that don't, so a lot of shops that do, and there's no right way, and there's nothing written in stone that you have to do it that way, but that's the best you could hope for, would be that there would be some diag charges and then a quick fix. But they could help you, but that's the best I can guess.
Okay. I do know that more troubleshooting, that there was a mass airflow sensor that was changed. If that was defective, would that cause that same fuel issue?
Well,
a potential fuel issue, I mean.
The mass airflow sensor measures the amount of air that the engine is inhaling, and it tells the computer, and the computer matches that with fuel. So you can see that if the mass airflow sensor, if it wasn't installed right, or if the boot behind it is torn and we're sucking unmetered air into the engine, then the computer's going to be really confused. And that happens. So if somebody's just recently done mass airflow sensor work, then it's usually mounted in between two rubber bellowed hoses. And they have to be in good shape. And you said that you had 105,000 miles on it, so it ain't no spring chicken. And that thing's had a whole lot of heat underneath the hood. And so and then if you find a crack in the bellows of the rubber boots that sits on the mass airflow sensor, get your damn duct tape out and stick it in the crack.
Okay.
Clear the computer and go drive it. And if the codes go away, then put $20 in the plate the next time you go to church for Mark Salem. I mean, really and
absolutely.
Truly, I'm telling you the truth. That's what I would do. If you found a crack, you're going to have to buy a hose one way or another. But this is the diagnostic process. Just stick it in there, flatten it out, and duct tape it, wrap it up, and go drive it. If everything's fine in a week, you're done.
Well, it's got more mechanical suspension work that needs to be done, so maybe we'll put more than that in the plate. Maybe we'll just bring the whole car to you.
All right, great. But what part of town are you in? Let me guide you to a shop close by where you work or you live.
Well, yeah, I work down by your shop, but
I'm
close. But the house is closer to that, closer to Bell and 17.
Okay. Well, I avoid those kinds of conversations. But if you already know where I'm at, you're more than welcome to go there. You're going to talk to my daughter Andy or my son Alan, and tell them your dad. And you can say what everybody else says: your dad's crazy, and they're going to just smile. So, all right, Stephen. Thank you very much. All righty.
Okay.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to give us a call. Gil, we got open lines, right?
That's correct.
Okay, the lines are wide open, and there's five of them, so 602-508-0960. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa. Brian and Thelma come from two families that were in the gas station business in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. Those young people, Brian and his wife Thelma, they know what it's like to go to dinner and have the smell of gas permeate the kitchen because their dad didn't wash their hands real well. They've both been around cars their whole lives, plus they can lean on their mothers and fathers to help them if they need to, but they don't. It's the only shop in Mesa I can recommend. It's the only shop in Mesa that has passed the muster. Others have applied, but for reasons that are mine and mine only, they weren't accepted into my group of the best car repair shops in the valley for a variety of reasons. Some of them because the owner's not on site. Some of them because they're part of a chain and we don't take chains. And some of them didn't have the recommended or the needed years of service, or some of them perhaps had some difficult reviews available on the internet. And so that's the reason why they're the only ones, but they have no problem. That's Thompson's Auto Repair on Main Street, just east of Stapley. Okay, when it comes to car repair, the real key is you, and you stick to just the facts. And when you need something done or something fixed, it's always nice just to write it down and put it on the dashboard and write to the technician that's going to work on my car, here's my cell phone if you have any questions. You have no idea how valuable that is and how much the technicians like that line. They like to be able to call you and ask you questions because that's going to shorten the diagnostic. Does this happen only cold? Yes, it does. Okay, thank you. I needed that. Does this happen hot? No, it doesn't. It only happens cold. Okay, thank you. I needed that. Those are the kinds of questions that we have that we don't know we're going to need to ask until we start working on the diagnostic part of your car. And it is true that sometimes, and maybe a third of the time, 25 to 30% of the time, we would like to talk to the owner, and it's not hard. Everybody has a cell phone, and we usually gather that information like every other shop in town does. And so, but then what happens is when you call the husband and the wife is the primary driver, he'll answer the questions, and you really wanted to talk to the wife because she's the primary driver. And sometimes that's just the macho-ness in me and everybody else. I mean, I think we all share that same male gene that you're not going to talk cars with my wife. I know about cars. I know, but I want to talk to her because she's the one's experiencing the problem. And I want to ask her hot, cold, fast, slow, left, right, air on, air off, heater on, air, you know, that kind of stuff. And when the check engine light comes on, does it stay on forever or is it gone the next morning? Those are kind of important questions, and that's why we want to talk to the driver. Anyway, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and we'll be back right after this. Okay, we're back. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and I'm going to give you some facts. And let me explain something to you, if I could. Just take a second. I know a guy who spends his whole life tracking parts backwards. And he negotiates deals and he visits factories and he's really adept at the testing procedures and the pricing structure and stuff. And as a matter of fact, the other day I called a friend of mine in the Midwest and I said, I was talking to a guy named Wayne and da 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 da. And he goes, is that Wayne? No, no. And I go, yeah, it is. And he goes, well, you don't need to talk to me. And I said, why, you don't like him? And he goes, no. He said, he's the guru of everything. You can't get anybody that's going to argue with Wayne. So I called Wayne up and I said, I want you to help me with this. So I'm going to give it to you just as quickly as I can. One oil filter maker makes 50% of all automotive oil filters. So if you walk into a place like Walmart and they got 20 different boxes of oil filters, his advice and my advice too is buy the cheapest one. One worldwide company makes 90, or five worldwide companies make 90% of the spark plugs. There's not going to be a lot of difference box to box. There's six companies that make 90% of the front wheel drive axles. So when you need a drive axle for your front wheel drive, and it's an axle with a constant velocity joint, a CV joint on both ends of the axle, I'd probably just buy the cheapest one if I were you. There's 15 companies globally that make 80% of all the automotive batteries, so don't tell me one is better than the other. The 15 companies make 80% of the batteries, and they appear in every box. He even says to me, if you want, I'll tell you what boxes they appear in. And I said, oh, no, I don't want that problem. So anyway, it's the fact of the matter is that there's 20 manufacturers make 80% of the brake pads and shoes in the United States, and they're in more than 50 boxes. 50 boxes. 25 manufacturers make 90% or 80% of the brake pads and shoes in the United States, and those end up in 50 different boxes. That just says all I need to say. Eric, thank you for holding. Peter, you stay right there, but Eric's first. How can I help you, Eric?
Yeah, I'm a longtime customer of Tom over at Action Auto, but I've got a quandary, and I'm hoping you can help me. I've got a vehicle I took to him. We didn't get the problem solved, and I'm hoping with your help I can take it back and know what to tell Tom to look for, right?
Well, tell me about the vehicle first.
2014 Dodge Caravan.
Okay.
My employee that told me what was wrong with it, said it was stalling. So that's what we told Tom, is it stalls, and he came back, it's fine, it works. There's no codes, it drives fine. But I had to drive it the other day, so what it actually is doing under acceleration, hard acceleration, everything works fine, it shifts fine, feels normal. But if you accelerate like a normal person, not like I do, then it surges it between gears sometimes.
Okay.
Almost feels like an engine mount, but we had that checked, and it wasn't an engine mount.
Well, and so this surge is what we're trying to find, right? It's not dying and stalling. It's not that it's smelling funny. It's just this surge.
Just the surge, but sometimes taking off from the light. There was one time when I took off, and it did like stall and then picked up again.
Okay, so it instead of stall. Let's use the word, it fell on its face. So I gave it gas. The motor kind of fell on its face. It was still running, but there was no power. And then all of a sudden, it recouped and went from there.
It almost felt like it slipped a gear, or the engine died. I couldn't. It happened so fast and was over with. And it only happened once, and I hadn't been able to recreate that.
Okay,
exact.
Well, don't say
it. When I just drive down the road, it kind of goes, as it shifts between gears, it does weird stuff.
Okay. Well, weird stuff doesn't work, and don't say that it's almost like it died, because if it died, you'd have had to start it back up. It's not going to die and then come back alive. So don't use those kinds of terminology, because they're not beneficial in this kind of discussion. Either it died or it didn't die, and if it died, you would have had to put it in neutral and start it back up and put it back in drive and continue on. The question, when you have a problem with drivability, in your case, you can have a fuel delivery problem, you can have an air malfunction, or you can have a transmission problem. It's up to you to determine, and I'll tell you what to do. I want you to start manually shifting the vehicle and see if you can change things. So I want you to pull it into low gear, and then and I want you to do that, and I want you to keep it out of overdrive. And then when you're on the freeway, I want you to drop down a gear or so, bring the tachometer up, and I want you to just say, give me all the fuel you got, and let's test the fuel pump. And then if you say, you know what, it'll do 70, but it won't do 72, even though my foot's on the floor, it runs out of power. Well, fuel pump or fuel filter. And if they can't duplicate it, I say that all the time to customers. If I can't duplicate it, I can't fix it. I can't find it, and I can't fix it. So you have two choices. We can start guessing with your money, or we just wait till it gets a little worse. But you apparently have figured out how to make it happen. That would be very valuable, I would imagine, to Tom in Action, that have you show one of their techs.
Sure. That's why I drove it myself and was going to take it in. But I was hoping you could tell me what to tell Tom so that he then has to make sure he gets it right.
Yeah, no, I think
I'm giving you a hard time.
And it's okay because Tom and I are good friends, and he would call me and he would use bad words, and he says, do you really think I need to know how to fix a car? And I'm gonna say, listen, his name was Eric.
Yeah, he'd know.
And I'm just teasing you, but no, I think fuel supply, I'd be really interested if that car in the middle of the night was northbound on 17 in the hills there, and if it would go kind of fast, and maybe bring the RPMs up without bringing the speed up by downshifting and going from fifth gear to fourth gear, fourth gear to third gear, or something like that. Let's get the demand of fuel up. But I think it might be a transmission issue, and I want you to take it out of overdrive And I want you to either that or bring it down into fifth or bring it down into fourth and drive it that way for a couple of hours or a couple of tasks. And let's see if it's a transmission problem. How many miles were on this?
130,000 roughly.
Okay. So it's been around the world five times. It's been around the equator five times. And so it this is fixable. And unfortunately, what they may have missed, and this is what we tell people, it's got to get worse before we can find it. I'm sorry, we just can't get it. And so, but another thing you can do too is if it's a fuel delivery problem, it'll get worse when the tank gets below a quarter. So if you say, you know, I'm going to consciously bring the tank below a quarter and I'm going to drive the heck out of it, you know, during the summertime and during when it's warm and stuff like that, that helps us because that will eliminate or point at a fuel supply problem or a fuel pressure problem that will make it happen more when we're down on the quarter tank, because the fuel pump is lubricated and cooled by the gasoline, and oftentimes the fuel pump is sitting right there at the bottom of the tank. So we got to get the tank kind of low to let that fuel pump see a little sunshine, and then when it does, it starts acting up, and you go, okay, now we're in tall cotton. Anyway, Eric, thank you very much. Good luck to you. And Peter, how can I help you?
Hi, just had to get you off speakerphone.
Okay.
I got two problems, and they're same vehicle. But one, thank the good Lord I tuned into your show for the first time, and I'm a new resident of Arizona.
Okay.
So I have no clue on a reliable shop to go to.
Okay, I can help you
with
that.
And not to make you repeat your whole segment on the air conditioning woes, I have a 1992 Ford Bronco. And a few years back, when I was living in another state, didn't really need the air conditioning, I had to replace. I replaced the compressor because it just won't run without a serpentine belt.
Okay.
So I'm looking for some place to go through the air conditioning system that where it grenaded.
Okay. So what part of town do you live in?
I'm extreme southwest Phoenix. I mean, I back up to Dairies.
Okay. Okay. You're down there, Central 7th Avenue, or 35th Avenue, south of Baseline?
Broadway and 79th.
Okay, okay. I don't have anybody down there at all. You're going to have to come up, and really a great shop is going to be Billy at, you know, today's one of those days. I'm looking at so many things in front of me on all my screens and stuff like that, and 25th Street Auto. Billy at 25th Street Auto, I think he's 25th Street and Indian School, or Harker's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Those two guys are in that vicinity. They're as close as I can get to you. Dave Martin's is also a shop there, 16th Street in Osborne. You can go to marksalem.com and look at the Best Car Repair Shops tab, and you can look for Harker and Martin's and 25th Street Auto, and all three of those old gray-haired SO son of a guns, They aren't going to have any problem with your 92 Bronco.
Now the next problem, and this is where I'm completely
lost. Oh, you know
lost.
What? I need to take a break real quick. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 33 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I'm with Peter, and we're talking about his Bronco AC, and we have four lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and you're welcome to call us, and then we'll get you on. Peter, let me just explain something real quick, and then I know you had another comment.
Sure, no worries.
I decided that I'm just going to give everybody the path we take on this kind of air conditioning issue. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to suck all the Freon out of it. We're going to weigh the Freon. We're going to check it for contamination. And we pull 3 pounds out, and the system holds 5. Okay, we're going to clean your 3 up and put back in. We're going to add 2 more to it. Now, when the system's discharged like that, then we're going to take the orifice tube. And the orifice tube is this little torpedo. And in the center of it is this little brass pipe with a hole in the brass pipe about the size of a big fat red hair. And then around it, on either end of it, is a screen. And we're going to want to look at the screen to see if we got a bunch of metal in there. So we suck all your refrigerant out, we down the system, we check the orifice tube, probably replace it, put it back in, we put your 3 ounces in it, and then we put 2 more because it holds 5. We start it up, it blows 38 degrees, we're done. That's it. You were low on Freon. That's what happens. But if it's full of metal, then we got to figure out where the metal's coming from. Is the compressor coming apart? Is the evaporator full of metal? Is the condenser full of metal? Where's the metal coming from? And more than likely, it's coming from the compressor. So that's the process to do it, but it's really pretty simple, and the equipment that we have today, most of it's automatic. It doesn't need to be babysat, so to speak. But go ahead, finish up on your AC issue.
Well, no, the system is discharged. In fact, when I put the compressor on, I just put it on, never hooked it up to keep so that I could drive it.
Okay. Now, do you have the old compressor?
No.
Okay. See,
it's long gone.
Okay, this is a problem now because you see, for instance, the system may have 5 ounces of oil in it, and we know that the compressor goes through the condenser and through the evaporator and comes back. And so the issue is that we need to check, and then we take the old compressor out and we empty the oil out, and let's say it has 3 ounces, but it's supposed to have 5 in the system. So we're only going to put 3 in the new compressor because there's already 2 other ounces in the system. Or we may have to flush it out at expense to you. We flush the whole system.
Yeah, I believe it needs to be flushed.
Okay. Then we flush the whole system. We start all over. We blow out all the oil, all the refrigerant. We capture the refrigerant, and then we're going to go back in with the 5 ounces that you needed at the beginning. So, yes, that's all easy stuff, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of equipment, and it's some time, but it's nothing that we don't do every summer.
Right. Now, this next problem is one. This Bronco, I've built about everything of it myself.
Okay.
I've had the engine out a couple times, gone through everything. What I've got now is my four-wheel drive is out.
Okay.
I had a transmission shop. They put a new shift motor on the transfer case.
Yeah, activator. Yeah.
Activator. And they stated that it would not come out of four-wheel drive. With the new, so they bolted the old one back on.
How many miles are on it?
Probably 220,000 miles.
Okay.
So I converted the front automatic hubs to manual locking hubs, so there's no problem there. But when they put the old activator back on, it came out of four-wheel drive. They were saying that it was probably the switch or something else. They couldn't figure it out before I moved out here to Phoenix. So I'm trying to find a place that can diagnose, that knows Ford four-wheel drive systems, the push button.
This is nothing.
2 minutes.
This is nothing. I don't know what quick lube shop you went to, but that sounds like the level. We have a button, and it's a push button, and it locks it commands the solenoid to pull this lever and engage the front axle. That's all we got. It's not that hard to check. It's up on the rack. So you put it in drive and the back wheel spin. You put it in neutral, you bring it to a stop, you push the four-wheel drive button, you might hear a clunk, you put it in drive, and all of a sudden the front tires are spinning. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't that tough. You confounded it though by putting the hubs on there but we can still activate the front differential by powering up the drive shaft. So you're okay. So the answer is what part of town? I think we already talked about Martin's Auto, 25th Street Auto, Harker's Auto. Those guys are all in your area, and every one of them could fix your problem. I don't know what the air conditioning is going to cost you,
I'm prepared for that costing quite a penny. But in Southern California, I could live without the air conditioning for years. Not so here.
Welcome to Arizona. Welcome to Arizona. But
it is my toy truck right now. Yeah. You know, I moved out here. I got a nice, huge RV garage, put a 4-post lift in, and I parked my Excursion under my Bronco. But I don't want the Bronco to be a museum piece.
Oh, wait a
minute. I want to get her out and
use her. Excursion? Is that Excursion got a 7.3?
No, it's got the 5.4.
Okay. I was about to offer you more money than what you paid for it if it had a 7.3 in it, but that's okay.
Yeah. Oh, I know those. I've seen some scary prices on those 7.3s.
Oh, I'm telling you, and there's a lot of them that have been road hard and put away wet, and they're not worth the big dollars that many of us are paying for the 7.3s. But the Excursion with the 7.3 diesel, that's the king dog right there.
Yeah, that, well, I couldn't turn this down. About 5 years ago, I found this one with 115,000 miles for $7,000.
No, that's good.
And she looked 6 months old when I bought her.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that.
I love Ford trucks.
The compressor that you put on this vehicle that we're talking about, the Bronco, is that what it is? Okay. You didn't do any oil transfer? You didn't measure the oil?
No. I didn't even take the plugs out of the back for the connections. I just put it on there so that because the way the serpentine belt set up,
right,
you cannot run the engine without that AC compressor there.
Okay. Well, you can, but those guys like us, we just know how to wrap it and not include the air conditioning on it. But it's okay. It's okay. And it takes a little bit of time. And, you know, I have gray hair like a lot of the other guys. So, but no, the only problem we're going to have is we don't have the oil compressor so we can do the oil. So we're probably going to spend a little bit more time blowing out the whole system, get as much oil out as we can, and then we're going to put it, and there's some rules for this, 1 or 2 ounces in the evaporator, 1 or 2 ounces in the condenser, and the compressor is going to have 3 ounces in it. It came with 3 ounces, and we don't want to have more than 5, so 3 plus 1 and 3 plus 2, another one is 5, and so we do that, and then we put Freon in it, and we hope like heck that it blows. Not blows, but we hope like heck that it's cold. And we're going to reach over there and grab the suction line on the dash connection to the evaporator, and if that baby's ice cold, ching ching, we just won the battle. So.
Yeah, well, she's also not shifting when I change the dash knobs.
Uh-huh.
It only blows air out through the windshield vents.
Okay,
so
that's
a whole other issue. That's probably the barn door.
Well, there is a blend door. It's a blend door,
yeah,
and it gives you, from the top, defrost on the top, center vent, and floor. But it could also be a vacuum problem. So we may not be providing the proper vacuum to the controls to make that blend door work. And us gray-haired guys right where to go to look for that. And a lot of times it's just a matter of we got a broken plastic line, or
lines. Yeah, well, that wouldn't surprise me because it is 30 years old.
Okay, so the hard plastic lines, we don't replace the plastic lines. We know where it's broken, and we just take a little piece of windshield wiper hose and we slide it over one end, we slide it over the other, and we're done. So all we're doing is patching
that.
It. Okay?
All right. Hey, you've been a great help. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, good luck, Peter. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. And I need to take a break, and I haven't kidded. You know, folks, I've got the best engineer. And Gil is just one of the best guys I've ever worked for. And he doesn't say anything. I'm at 43 minutes after the hour, and I was supposed to break at 40. I missed my 30 break by a minute and a half. he didn't even use any bad words. But he is so skilled in covering up my faux pas. So, we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me just explain real quick. In the radio world, it's all about a clock. So we come on the radio about 3 minutes after the top of the hour. And so Mark is supposed to break at 17, but it's kind of a fuzzy break. So Mark can do it 16 or 17 or 18. But when we hit the 30 mark, I mean 30 minutes and 0 seconds, my big mouth better be quiet. And then at 40, it's flexible. But at 45, at 58:50, which is 58 minutes and 50 seconds, I need to be gone. Well, Gil is the guy that makes me look really smart and really good. Les, let's go to Les. And Les, how can we help you today?
Well, Gil is the guy that makes me look really smart and good.
He's listening to the radio.
Yeah. Les, you need to listen to the telephone because they put me on delay because I have a bad habit of using bad words. Les?
Oh, are you talking to me?
Yeah, Les. Yeah, grab your phone. We're talking live now.
I'm sorry. Okay, can you hear me all right?
I can barely hear you, but go ahead and ask your question. No problem.
Okay, two things quick. One is you folks referred me to Thompson's, and I can't rave enough about what a great operation over there. In fact, they sent out this newsletter, and which kind of surprised me, and had a coupon in there. I referred a buddy of mine. He needs some AC work. The other quick question is I've got a 4x Tacoma, and I'm wondering, should I periodically put it in four-wheel drive low or whatever?
Yes, I do that myself. I do it every other month, and I put it in four-wheel drive when I'm going to go straight for a period of time. So I may leave Tempe or Chandler and be heading up to Payson to see the horses and see, make sure they're okay. So for the first 10 or 15 miles when I'm going straight, I'll just put it in four-wheel high. And I usually try to run it at highway speeds and four-wheel high straight ahead at about 55, 65 miles an hour. And I do that for probably 10 miles, and then I pull off the side of the road, kick it out. I've warmed up the fluid. I've lubricated everything. And then if my wife's driving, it's balls to the wall to Payson.
All righty.
Okay.
That's all I needed to know, and I appreciate that very much. Great show, great referrals, and keep up the good work for the next 100 years.
Thank you. Thank you, Les. Thank you very much. Rhea, you're up next.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a smell in my 2008 Honda Accord of gas in the back seat. And I was told that Hondas have this problem with the fuel pump assembly or a fuel pump. And one person told me I need to drop the gas tank to look for it, and one person told me to take the back seat out and they'll look at the fuel pump assembly first.
Both of them could be right.
Okay.
It could be accessible from underneath the back seat. And it may not be accessible, and we may have to drop the tank. If first of all, a gray-haired guy like me is going to put it up on the rack, and we're going to see the stains from the gas leak. And if they come all the way around the tank, the north side, the south side, the east side, the west side, and there's drips underneath the tank, then we know it's on top of the tank. We're done. So all we do is pull the tank down and reseal the plate that holds the fuel pump, and it also holds the tank sending unit. So we're just going to take the plate off the top of the tank, put a new gasket on, and we're done. That's all. It's easy.
Okay.
Thousands of dollars. Thousands of dollars. Thousands and thousands.
I'm getting a new...
where do you live?
North Scottsdale. I heard you say Blackwell Automotive before, so
yeah.
I could go there.
When you call him, you just say Mark said that he'll be happy to stop by and help you with this. He'll just die. He'll probably use bad words. This really isn't that big of a deal, but I also want to say that it'll be a lot cheaper on you if you will bring it to him with a quarter tank or less.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so just run it
Perfect.
Down.
I just quarter filled tank. Up, so now I have to wait.
Just wait a little while. But and if we pull the back seat and everything is right there, then we don't have to drop the tank. All of our work's going to be boop, right there. Let me tell you a quick story real quick. There was this lady that was a customer of mine. She was the nicest lady in the world. You never used any bad words around her. She understood, stupid jokes and all that kind of stuff. And she had this gas smell in her car. And we said, okay, well, we can't find it. Would you bring us the trunk key? No, it's not in the trunk. Okay. This went on for like 6 months. I still got the gas smell. We haven't been able to get in your trunk. No, don't worry about that. So she brings it in. This is a true story, I swear to you. So we know how to get into the trunk. We fold the back seat down. We go through with a long screwdriver, and we pop the trunk lid. And in the back of the trunk is a Goodwill box filled with underwear.
Oh.
And there's a bunch of gas in there too. So we go in, we fix the gas leak, we take the underwear and throw them away. We clean up the car real good and everything, and we tell them we just can't find it. And but we spent 2 hours doing it, and so we just charged her. So to this day, she doesn't know that we know she had all of her underwear in a box in the trunk of her car. but she wouldn't give us the damn key. And so we figured, we know it's back there. So we're going to go. But don't put any of your underwear anywhere near the back seat, okay? Take it in and tell.
Okay.
But this, on a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 3, okay? This is no big deal.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay?
Okay, wonderful.
All righty.
And do you always have to do a dye test for an evac and a recharge?
No, you don't have to. It depends on why you're doing it. For instance, if the car came in and it holds 3 pounds of Freon and I took 3 pounds of Freon in it, then I am going to evacuate it and recharge it, but I'm not going to go any more than that. Evacuation means we're sucking all the air out of the system so we can only put refrigerant back in. So evacuate and recharge. if you don't suck the air out, then what you end up with is just 3 pounds of refrigerant and a bunch of air, and that's going to cause a substandard amount of cold air coming out of the vent. So the answer is we're going to suck the system down, and that we suck in the air out of it, and then we're going to put refrigerant in it, and that's the best way to do it. So it's a matter of plugging in a machine and walking away. It's not like we got to tend the stupid thing.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay?
Okay.
All right, thank
you.
Thank
you very much.
You bet. Brian, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm looking at purchasing a 2007 G6, the sport version. I think it's a GTP. And I was told it has a bad intermediate shaft. Can you give me some feedback on that?
Why don't you tell them what a G6 is? Tell everybody that's listening to us what a G6 is.
Oh, a Pontiac G6.
Okay. All right. The intermediate shaft of a Pontiac... What does that mean to you, an intermediate shaft of a Pontiac?
Is it part of the power steering? The rack and pinion, I mean?
So is this a power steering issue? Is this a clicking noise in the steering wheel or something like
it's
that?
It's kind of when you're turning, it kind of makes a thump, thump, thump noise.
Okay.
When you put it in reverse, it goes thump, thump, thump.
Okay. To be honest with you, some gray-haired guy can just listen to it and tell you what it is. The intermediate shaft, if you're talking about the steering linkage, the intermediate shaft is only going to make a noise when you change directions. So you're going straight down the road, and there might be a little bit of a rattle because the joint's bad. Then when you turn right, the noise is going to go away, and when you turn left, the noise is going to go away. But that's an intermediate shaft symptom. But that doesn't sound like what you have.
No, it doesn't.
Okay, where do you live? Cross streets.
North Scottsdale.
Okay. You know, this is something I feel pretty confident that this is something that some gray-haired guy can spend about 10 minutes and watching you make the noise, and then he's going to want to take the wheel and go drive it with you in it. I'm pretty sure this diagnostic is probably about a 20 to 30 minute diagnostic. I don't think this is going to be a big deal, especially when you can make it happen. See, that's the key. You can make it happen. So I can sit next to you at the beginning, and then you can teach me how to make it happen, and then I can feel it in the steering wheel. I feel it in the seat of my pants. I feel it in the bottom of my shoes because I've got them plastered against the floorboard. Those are the diagnostic procedures that are supposed to be done. And most of the time, us gray-haired guys know how to do that. So if you're up in North Scottsdale, we talked about Blackwell all along.
Sure.
Tell him you're the third caller that I made, and that before you're going to bring your car in, he needs to send me like $2,000. And tell him I'll take a check. I'm kidding. I don't take any bird dog fees. But he would just laugh. But no, Blackwell would be a good guy up there, up north to, and especially when you can do it. Now, you don't want to go in on Monday morning or Friday afternoon and ask him to lend you a tech so you can take the tech for a 2-hour ride so you can get it to happen. You need to call and make an appointment and say, I'd like to take someone for a 15-minute ride and show them how to make the noise. And then I'm willing to leave it there and have you diagnose it and bid the repair. That's the proper way to do it.
Sure.
Okay?
Okay, yeah, and it makes the noise immediately.
Okay. Okay, then that should be easy. That should be easy.
Yep.
All righty.
All right, Mark, thank you.
You bet. Boy, the problem is in North Scottsdale, folks, I'd love to send you to a bunch of shops. There's a guy up there named Goody who does Mercedes-Benz. He's the best Mercedes-Benz guy I've ever seen in my life. He's fixed 2 Mercedes-Benz for us over the phone. Over the phone, but we could give him data that you can't give him because we're plugged into the car. But he says, I have too much business to be on your show. I have too much business to be on your list. He says, and I only work on Mercedes. But Goody's like, you talk about the top dog in town. When you go over to his shop, there are cars from other shops, other auto repair facilities. Listen to what I'm saying now. And you know that many of the auto repair facilities in town are chain stores, independent shops, and dealerships. And some of the cars on his lot come from those areas because he's so doggone good, especially on the old ones. But it translates to the new ones. Getting shops to pass my criteria is tough, too. They have to The owner has to be on site. They have to be around for a long time. They have to have good reviews. They have to have a membership in some kind of computer consumer dispute process, like the Better Business Bureau. They have to participate, and then I'm happy to send them customers because they deserve it and because geographically they happen to be perfect. That Northeast Scottsdale area is just tough for me. I have tried. There's lots of shops up there. Some of them tried and couldn't make it. Some of them I wouldn't let. Some of them hadn't paid their parts bills. Some of them are too new. And that's the one that I kind of keep an eye on because I want to look at them after 2 or 3 years and see what the reviews say and what the people say about them. I don't want to take a kid that just opened up an auto repair shop because his uncle died and gave him some money and figure that he's going to be able to fix problems on cars that is going to make guys like me that are old, weathered technicians work a little harder. So that's kind of the responsibility. But since 1988, I've had a good list of good shops, and they've not let me down. And we've had 2 or 3 disputes since 1988. I've been involved in all of them, and they were handled to the customer's satisfaction and to the shop's satisfaction. It was just that we had to kind of motivate the shop to get off the horse they were on and maybe hop on something else. So those were the kinds of things that we have to do. My email is mark@marksalem.com. If you have a car question, make sure you put your phone number in there and tell me what's a good time to call, because I'm going to have questions. I can't fix a car. I can't help you with a car problem with just you telling me about it. I need to ask questions. And sometimes I'll just call you, but I call from a blocked line. So if you email me and then 20 minutes later somebody calls through a blocked line, you answer the phone, you say hello, and I'll say, "This is Mark Salem. You ask me a car question." And you'll know immediately it's me, because that's what I do. But sometimes I just talk back to you and say, "Hey, I'm going to call you in the next 20 minutes. Would you take a call from a non-pub number?" And hopefully you will. So anyway, mark@marksalem.com, and every Saturday I'm here at 10 o'clock, and we're here talking about cars and car repair questions and car repair problems, and you're always welcome to join us. But Monday through Friday, mark@marksalem.com is a good place as well. Remember to ask for your old parts back. Number 1, so you can look at them, and number 2, in case that new part didn't work, they can put the old one back on.